My mother, for 25 years, she died when she was 84. For 25 years, she had severe diabetes. She had heart trouble. She had she had to have a pacemaker. She was always in and out of the hospital, always having to take the diabetic medicine, high blood pressure. It was very, very sad. She would get skin eruptions and have to stay in the hospital for months trying to heal these skin eruptions. I can remember that she had a huge skin eruption on her back, and she had to stay in that hospital 3 months to try to heal that. People, I'm talking about a serious illness here. And it stems from the kinds of foods we eat and stuff we drink and stuff we put in our body. And so I am definitely, definitely sold on abstinence and Overeaters Anonymous, because I have hope. I have hope that that won't happen to me. I would like to say that my father, I never knew what it was to have my father in the home. My mother and father were separated, divorced. When my father had a blood disease, and he had to have his leg amputated. So that's two people in my immediate family, one on each side, that had to have a leg amputated. He also had to have all his teeth removed, and he couldn't eat. All he could do was drink liquid foods and stuff like that. And when he was 80 years old, he took a gun. Couldn't take it anymore, the pain he was in, the emotional pain, the physical pain. That's not a pretty thing to have to say. It's not something nice to have to go to. But it's the truth of my life. A few months after he died, I found out that I had been disinherited because I had not showed him love and affection. Another painful situation. To read that on a legal piece of paper. He disinherited all of us except one great-grandchild. So I went through all of that, guess how? Abstinently. The night it was a Monday afternoon in October the 2nd of 1989, that I got the phone call that he had committed suicide. Guess where my butt was on Monday night? He was in a chair at an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. And my husband drove me there.
Our speaker for the Principles of Justice Retreat was Janice S.
We get here. This love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. This fellowship of the Spirit. The love that touches our spirit, our soul. And we're never alone if we only go and reach out. Because the hand is always there. But we have to go and take it. I went through all of that. It tore the family more apart. I'm the fifth child of six. My mother and father, my mother was 19 when they got married, and my father was 18. They were both young. And they had two boys. And then they had a daughter. Her name was Ruby Nell. And when Ruby Nell was 7 months old, she developed whooping cough, and it turned into pneumonia. And Ruby Nell died. Their third child died. And so they say that that's a big stress on a family, on a couple. I don't know. I never experienced it, but they say it is. And my mother, at that time in the country, they waked the bodies in the house. And my mother was sitting there at the coffin, and she had I've been told all of this. That she had a cerebral hemorrhage, and they had to hospitalize her. And she was hospitalized in a mental hospital for a year. And my father, I've been told, was so distressed because he had these two children, these 4 and 2 boys, and that he had to have somebody take care of him and he had to work. And that he would go to his mother's house and he would cry and cry and cry because his wife was in the hospital and his little girl had died and he had these two boys. And so he turned to what a lot of people in pain turn to. He turned to alcohol and he turned to women. And so, you know, that's how that went. So when my mother came home, you know, there was a lot of trouble there. More trouble had generated. And so my father was a carpenter. He was a very good carpenter. He worked, you know, he built buildings and not just houses, but buildings and traveled all over doing carpenter work. And so he built them a little shotgun house at that time. And later they just added rooms, you know, onto that part of that house that he had built. Then my mother got pregnant again after she got home from the hospital, and she had her fourth child was a girl, and her name was Peggy Ann, and when this girl was 2.5 years old, I was born, Janice Marie, and I remember Peggy Ann. I remember her. But when I was 2.5, Peggy Ann developed the measles and she died with pneumonia. And so I was 2.5, almost 2.5. I was still nursing the breast. I was abruptly taken off the breast. I was taken off the breast too abruptly, too soon, even though I was 2.5. In those days, I was told that women nurse babies because that kept them from getting pregnant. They believed that kept them from getting pregnant. So my mama nursed all of us as long as she could. Still had 6 kids. So I asked my mom, I said, Mom, what happened to me there? And she said, well, One of my cousins took me, and I said, well, what did they do with me? And she said, well, they probably gave you cookies to soothe you. You know, something to soothe a crying baby wanting a breast, you know. And so anyway, when I came back home, it was in the dead of winter, January the 13th, cold. I know what a cold house is. We lived in the country. We had a fireplace and a wood stove at that time. And that doesn't warm a real cold house very, very warm. We used to bundle around. And we used to sleep with quilts this thick on our bed. I mean, just like so. People are shaking their heads like they might understand what I'm talking about. But I cannot stand all that cover on me anymore. I've been so snuggly at Wanda's. She has electric blankets. And later, after we got electricity and all, Mama got electric blankets also. But anyway, I just visualize these things because I'm sure it's what happened that when I came home without the breast. I came home to a grieving mother. I came home to not having a sister when my daddy wasn't there. I mean, it was my mom and I in this cold house, huddled by this fireplace. Another thing is I cannot stand to hear a baby cry. And I visualized that Mama was probably holding me on one side, nursing me, holding Peggy on the other side with her with this pneumonia, you know, trying to comfort us. And probably maybe she was crying or something. But when I go to a restaurant or a Walmart or something like that, I said, why don't they tend to that kid? You know, I said, I can't stand to hear a child cry. Never could stand to hear my own children cry. You know, I always tried to tend to them. But some people can just let their kids cry and cry, but I can't. And I don't like to hear other people's kids cry. And it's like I want to go tend to them. That's part of my control there, too. But one of the things I'm talking about is the house that my daddy built. He added on rooms to it. But each time he added a room, he had to put a piece of wood to, you know, tell me, help me, man. What? had a little bump on it. You know, anyway, it had a bump on it. It was a
threshold.
What is it?
Threshold.
Yeah, a little threshold. Thank you. So I need to, y'all to help me talk here. So anyway, when Peggy Ann was still living, and I was little, I was probably just barely over 2 years old, but I remember this. I had a little Mama said it was my tricycle, and that she used to ride the tricycle, and I would stand on the back of that tricycle, and we'd go around and around that house and go over those thresholds, you know. And I can remember us going over there, and we'd laugh and have just the best time. And we wore a hole in the door frame from, you know, hitting that. But I can remember that. This is not something somebody told me. I remember that, you know. So you can imagine the fun, the playmate that she was to me. And so I lost that and I missed that. And I know that those kinds of things have left psychological damage to me. But I know those things today, and I feel like I've had a psychic change. But, you know, the book tells me that I have to bring all of these things up if I can help others. And so that's why I share that. I don't share it from a lot of pain, although I may cry. But it's not real painful inside, and I've healed a lot from that. My daddy got married the day he got a divorce. I was 7 years old. When I was 6 years old, my oldest brother, who was 12 years older than me, was only 18. He married this girl that was 16, and they moved in with us. And she was filthy. We were neat and clean. We didn't have much, but what we had was clean. And she came in and disturbed our whole life. And she tried to boss me around. And I can still remember when I'd come home with a grade that they didn't think was appropriate. I can still see my mama, her, and my brother. I was on one side of the bed and they was on the other. And it was just like I felt like I was on a firing squad. You know, them fussing at me for not having made a better grade. She used to tell me, because the way I'm built, my stomach sticks out, and that's always been a bone of contention for me. I wish I had a flat stomach. You know, I see these women with these flat stomachs, but some of them have big butts. I always wanted a flat stomach. And so I started wearing a girdle, I think, when I was 14 years old, and sucked that in, you know. But anyway, my sister-in-law used to tell me, Janice, you know, she said, when you have a big stomach, she said, people are going to think you're fooling with boys. What does that mean? You know, so I mean, you know, that's basically the kind of sex education I got from her, you know. And then also, I peed in the bed until I was 10 years old. And I slept in a baby bed until I was, as long as I peed in the bed. Because that, you know, Mama had the washing and everything. And before we got electricity, I think I was 7 years old when we got electricity. She used to have to wash outside of the rubbing board and boil the water in a big iron pot and stuff like that. And so that's where I slept. But it's like being in a box and confined. And I had a hard time in life knowing that I could go further than that. I could go further than this. I could go way out here. I could go way out there. I could do all of this. And now, guess what? I belong to an organization that's worldwide. I got the whole world. I'm known almost all over the world because of my service in Overeaters Anonymous. Now, isn't that a long ways from being a baby bed? This little barefoot country girl from Gonzales, Louisiana. Yep. Well, I was still in this baby bed was when I started spotting blood. Very young. And I can remember at night, one night, my mama, we all slept in the same room. My mama had another child after me, a boy. And I was 4 years old when he was born. He slept with my mom, and I slept in the baby bed, and was all in one room. And I can remember my mom telling me, "Janice, do you know what a big girl is?" "No," in the dead of night. You know, having a conversation like that in the dead of night. "No." She said, "Well, I noticed that you're spotting blood, you know." And then she started trying to tell me what this meant, you know. Well, so a month before I made 11 years old, my period really started. Too young. But that's the way my life went. My bust started developing. My bust started developing when I was about 8 or 9 years old. I remember I went over to my cousin's house one time, and the boys were without a shirt, and I thought I could be without a shirt. I was only 8, but you know, it's still how it starts. And so they told me I need to put a shirt on. Why did I have to put a shirt on? They didn't have a shirt on. So, I mean, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. I developed, the boys liked me. I liked the boys. I mean, you know, I just always, I had a boyfriend, liked that. When I was 14 and a half years old, I used to love to dance. One of my sister-in-laws taught me how to dance in Jitterbug in our kitchen. We had our radio in the kitchen. I don't know if that's where y'all had yours, but the kitchen was it was not just a place to eat. It was a place to mingle and a place to socialize and all. And we used to listen to the radio a lot because we didn't have television. And so my aunt and uncle, my mama's sister, my uncle played in the band, and my aunt tagged at the door. In those days, they used to put a little tag on you. I don't know if anybody knew that or experienced that, but every night they had a different tag because you couldn't cheat. You couldn't go in there because the tag was different the next night, you know. So anyway, my aunt told me that if I would meet them at their house, that I could go to the dance this Saturday night. This was March 4th. Wow, that was yesterday. March 4th. I didn't have any way to get there except my two legs. I walked 2 miles. Cold weather, March 4th. I was walking to my destiny. Didn't know it, but I was. I walked there. I went with them. I walked in the door. They had these two guys sitting across the room. And one guy told his friend, he said, "You see that girl that just walked in? I'm going to marry that girl." Came and asked me to dance. And the rest is history. We dated 2.5 years. He was a gentleman, a gentleman, a gentleman. He never violated me in any kind of way, even though I was so young. He was 21. He's 7 years older than I am. And I love that man for that. He allowed us to have a good time. He dated me. He courted me. He took me to great places, wonderful places, because he had a good job. He had a beautiful car. He had a 53 Bel Air Chevrolet. I didn't have to walk many places again. Because he was there every chance he could be. I was young. I didn't know, you know, but I liked the attention he gave me. I liked the way he was. I loved his parents. His daddy was so wonderful to me. He taught me how to drive. He taught me how to write a check. He taught me all the things that a father should have taught me that I didn't have. I loved those people. They loved me. They're both dead. Anyway, when I was not quite 15, Jimmy wanted to give me an engagement ring. I'm wearing it today. I wasn't even 15. He wanted to give it to me for Christmas. And so we went to Ryder's on 3rd Street in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That was the big shopping street at that time. And bought this set of rings I have on right now. I had them redone there, but the same setting and everything. They're still pretty, aren't they? I love them. And we got out of the store in the middle of 3rd Street. I said, I don't want to wait till Christmas. I wanted to put that ring on my finger right there. I got engaged right in the middle of 3rd Street when I wasn't quite 15 years old. You know, compulsive child. I was just a child. I was a child. But I was very mature also. And so anyway, we came home and showed this to my mom. And she was standing by the icebox in the kitchen. We call it icebox because we used to have an icebox. It's a refrigerator nowadays. But I showed this to my mom, and she turned as white as that refrigerator, Jimmy says. I wasn't looking. And he was scared to death. She was going to make me give it back and all. And so she went and sat on the porch. I don't know if y'all had a porch, but a porch is a wonderful place to be. A porch with a swing and a rocker. We spent so much time out there on that porch with that swing.